going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 201. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app, 5 stars everywhere as well. Find us on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel. We got the Play Tessie playlist there, so you can hit the thumbs up on all the videos. You know the drill. Subscribe to WEI. Find us on the socials, at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here, Pat's here, it's Gordo here with you. Sox were doing better. They'd won 5 out of 6, and then the last game, you know, two good games against the White Sox, particularly the first one. The second one, I don't know, I actually wouldn't call it a good game. They won the game, but it the fashion in which they won it contributed to why they lost the third game in the series. The bullpen in both games just imploded in the seventh inning. In the first game, it was Weiser. In the second game, it was Zach Kelly. Just, I don't know. I still can't quite get a read on this team, because every time I feel like we're about to get into a good run of wins, a loss happens that just has me thinking like, okay, what the hell is going on here? And today as we record on Sunday, this loss definitely falls into that category. Multiple run lead in the seventh inning, and Zach Kelly comes in and immediately puts three guys on base. They bunt against Justin Wilson and then drive in the next two. And then Liam Hendricks comes in for his long-awaited return, which congrats to Liam Hendricks, but lets up the bomb to Andrew Vaughn. Let's get into the bullpen. Also, shout out, if you're listening to this running the marathon, shout out to you. There's definitely people doing that. So shout out to you guys listening to Play Tessie as you run the marathon. But fellas, we should get right into this bullpen stuff, because to me, it feels like they're a setup arm short right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is something all of us said, all three of us, all four of us, even producer Joe was in on this. We all thought they needed one more arm. I think David Robertson was the popular choice, which I would have been totally fine with. He's still unsigned, which is odd coming off.
What is he doing right now? What do you think he's doing?
Chilling, chilling in Rhode Island. He's watching the Celtics, probably a big C's guy, New Englander. But I actually think I'd rather a closer. I'd rather they get, you know, we're far from the deadline. We could talk specifics later on, but I think they need a closer so that they could use Chapman more freely and Slayton as well. And I think that would go a long way. And if they're not going to get a closer, maybe get a guy again like David Robertson, and then you make Slayton the official closer. It just seems a little unstructured right now. And I think that one arm would do a lot for the structure of the bullpen, define roles, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think right now, which is scary, it feels like you're three relievers deep. Whitlock, yeah. Slayton, Chapman. Everyone else is volatile. Every single guy is volatile. Weissert, Kelly, Bernie, Hendricks is back. He lit up a tank today. Like, you have three guys who are surefire. Everyone else, you literally don't know what you're going to get. And like Sammy said, we've been saying going back to probably November, December, after Wilson and Chapman signed, you need one more. And it feels like that one less that they don't have is biting them in the ass twice a week.
I do want to give quick shout to Greg Weissert. He had a rough game on Saturday, but he was really good before that. I think it was 26 consecutive outings without surrendering a run. So, but even so, I still agree with you, Pat. I don't feel bad when Weissert's pitching. I just don't feel like when Chapman's on the mound, I feel very good. I feel confident. When Slayton's on the mound, I feel good. Whitlock, same thing. Weissert, I feel he's probably going to get the job done. He's kind of the bridge between the three guys we've talked about and the rest of the bullpen. It's just, I don't know. It's a tough fix this early on. Not that you need to quote unquote fix it. You can give guys chances at this point in the season, but I think when we get to the deadline, this is what our big convo is going to be about.
Yeah. I mean, it's just to Pat's point of them being three deep, the three guys that are they've looked phenomenal. Like Chapman has been practically automatic. Slayton my stat was he's had nine appearances and he's been base runnerless in seven of them. His ERA is 4.5 because he let in four runs on one of them and kind of got dinked and dunked in that outing, but it is what it is. It was one bad outing. Everything else has been spotless. Whitlock, particularly of late, has looked amazing. But yeah, Sammy, to your point, the bridge to those guys is Weissert. And the way they have these guys rolled right now, Whitlock is on a firm, not back-to-back schedule. Chapman can go back-to-backs, but we know the numbers on that are not necessarily as pretty, or at least they weren't last year when he goes back-to-back. Slayton, it feels like they've been semi-careful. It just feels like they've been trying to be kind of careful with Slayton and Whitlock. And Chapman, it's just they've used him, and it's kind of hope that he doesn't burn out territory. This bullpen, for it to be good, needed those three guys and one more to be locked down. And you saw it like when Greg Weissert had that game in Tampa where he looked insane and he got out of a big spot. It was like, all right, like this bullpen looks really good. But and he'd gone, I think it was 26. It was like 25 out of 26 outings were scoreless or something before that. So like, but at the same time, we've seen the Greg Weissert experience. He gets on the mound. He has let in some inherited runners in that span. So it's not like it's been perfect. He's not a guy that you necessarily want in a one-run game in the seventh. In this particular instance, it was a three-run game in the seventh. Most of the time, he's going to get it done, but he's not automatic, and they could use a guy for that spot. With Hendricks not being the guy that I think we thought, and granted, it's been one outing, so we'll see. Like we've seen other guys struggle in spring training and then figure it out in the season. But with his velocity not really where it was, and just the results that we've seen, to me, I think Hendricks is a I'll believe it when I see it type. So if that's going to be the case, they're going to be pretty reliant on someone to step up and become that surefire seventh inning guy. And to this point, like I think Justin Wilson's done a pretty good job, but he's very situation specific.
Yeah. Yeah. Wilson's been all right. I think the thing with Weissert, just to go back to him really quickly, then we can move on, is that if his slider isn't locating, you kind of know it's going to be ugly because then it's just the fastball. He's a two-pitch guy for the most part. I think he has a changeup once in a while, but he's mostly fastball, slider, sweeper, whatever the hell you want to call it. So that's kind of same with Zach Kelly. when he's not locating the sweeper, you're kind of like, oh God, now it's just fastball changeup. It just reduces the arsenal. I want to throw out a name, a AAA name, see what you guys think about a potential, you know, tryout, call it a tryout, call him up for a few days. 32-year-old Nick Birdie, Red Sox got him. He was on the Yankees last year. He's been in Major League Baseball for, I think, like 5 years, but he's only thrown 25 innings or so. He was hurt last year for most of it. Healthy now, he's killing it in AAA. Guy throws a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. That's what it sits at. He's pitched 7 games, 9.2 innings, 0.93 ERA. So it went down even more from when I checked earlier today. And like I said, he's 32, big guy. He's 6'3", 225. This guy's a big dude. And so with him being older, if it doesn't work, whatever, see ya. It's a guy who's, I hate to use this word, kind of disposable for the Red Sox. We've heard Robert Stock use that word. They're replaceable. We've heard Casas use it, so not being mean here. But that's a guy who I'd like to see get a chance. He's cooking right now. He's been in Major League Baseball, throws hard, big dude. Why not?
Well, I feel like with an option like that, he kind of just goes into the pool with everyone else, and he should be in that pool, which is a testament to him and what he's done, because he wasn't even in big league camp. Like people did not know that this guy was in the organization, but he has a very similar name to one of my friends from high school, so I've always followed him. So I was very excited when they brought him aboard, but I feel like with this team and where they are with this whole seventh inning dilemma or whatever, they've got to just throw shit at the wall until something sticks, and hopefully it does, and like you run into a Ryan Brazier 2018 run, and maybe, you know, one of your guys like a Greg Weiser or a Zach Kelly or Brennan Bernardino or even a Josh Winkowski, who hasn't pitched badly, like one of these guys can kind of turn into, and like I'll add like a Luis Guerrero into that. I know everyone wants to kind of anoint him the closer, even though he's got like a 6 ERA in AAA right now, but I'll add him into there too. Like, you throw these guys into situations, and if they do well, they get more of them, and then they get more of them, and they get more of them, and that's kind of how like guys like Matt Barnes and Heath Hembree rose to prominence back in like that last great era of Red Sox baseball. Like, they're going to need someone to step into that, and to me, you just keep on trying that stuff, and then at the trade deadline, if something hasn't stuck, then like you just have to aim higher with your trades. And get a guy who's been in the seventh, eighth, or ninth innings.
Which is the shit that we want to throw at the wall to see if it sticks currently for everyone? I'm going with Birdie.
I mean it's everything. Like for me, like like Greg Weiser did not have a good outing on Saturday. Greg Weiser is still to me the guy who I'm throwing out in those innings. And if he continues to struggle, then you throw someone else in those innings. Zach Kelly was the guy who I thought was going to emerge into that role, but he's been too inconsistent. Like, you just, at this point, he just can't get those spots. And like, I understand, like I said at the beginning of the episode, the Saturday game leaked into the Sunday game because they had to go to extras and they used Whitlock in the 10th, and he was phenomenal. Don't get me wrong. Pretty much won him that game by keeping that runner on second from scoring. But then you couldn't use Whitlock on Sunday. Whitlock probably could have gone the seventh and eighth on Sunday to bridge to Chapman. Instead, they had to go to Zach Kelly, who, let's be real, he should have been able to hold that lead. He'll tell you that. Like, obviously, this was far from the outing that he wanted to have. But would you feel way more confident with Garrett Whitlock out there? Of course. The way he's been throwing the ball and against a team like the White Sox, it would have been automatic.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, how could anyone disagree with that? That game on Saturday was, we're all happy they won. Happy for Casas, got the walk-off single off the wall. But you knew right after, like, all right, who we got tomorrow?
Yeah.
Who we got left in the bullpen? And these are guys, like you said, Zach would say the same thing. He's got to be able to handle that situation. It's not an excuse. There's never an excuse to lose to the fucking Chicago White Sox in the year 2025. But it just... it directly impacted it. There's no way around it. Directly, if you have Whitlock today, you didn't have to use him yesterday, I think the Red Sox win.
Sammy, I have a question for you, because you've talked about Nick Birdie a couple times here. If they gave Nick Birdie a shot, how do you see him fitting into? Because he's not going to be like a mop up guy, multiple innings, whatever. Like you said, he throws high 90s shit. Like, he's not going to be the mop-up guy. If he's coming up, he's going to come up to probably be an inning guy. So where do you want him to start, and like, where do you think he could go? Like, are you bringing him in to try to be that bridge, or are you bringing him in sort of hoping that he builds his way there over time?
No, I probably bump up Weissert's role slightly and give Birdie 6th or 7th inning, see how he does, and go from there. I wouldn't throw him into the fire. I think the Red Sox right now are, they can handle losing a multi-inning guy. Like, are we sending down Zach Kelly in this situation? I need that info for the answer for this question.
Well, here's a question for you guys. who would you send down right now if you were calling up reliever? Would it be, well, actually, Wink is the bump up man right now. He's the only one, so that actually does answer the question. It would probably be Zach Kelly.
It would have to be Zach. Yeah, see, because you need. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's the timing of it's weird, just because you also have Bayo coming back. So then, do you DFA Newcomb? Do you make Newcomb the mop-up guy, and then Wink goes down? Like, there's kind of a chain of events there. I think that's actually probably what happens. I think Newcomb slides into the mop-up role. Wink goes down, but that's for Bayo. If you're calling up a guy like Birdie, you still need a counter move there. And I would say at this point, yes, probably
carry,
Zach.
They would carry 4 lefties in the bullpen: Newcomb, Chapman, Wilson, Birdie.
Yes, but the Newcomb role doesn't matter. Like, lefty righty doesn't matter. He's just there to eat innings. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. He could throw with his feet. Fair. It doesn't matter.
Fair. Yeah, it's just weird. I guess so. Yeah, that's fair. Did I answer your question, Gordo? I don't remember.
No, you did. Let's go to Pat though, because Pat's got to answer your question. Like, if you're throwing shit at the wall, who is the guy that you think could stick in that? Let's call it, because like we all have our bullpen hierarchies. We all agree that in some order, it's like the Chapman, Slayton, and Whitlock are the three premier relievers on the Red Sox. Who do you think has the best chance to stick in that fourth on the hierarchy spot? Also, none of us.
You have to.
You go ahead, Pat.
No, I was going to say, you have to lean Weissert at this point, right? Bernie's been pretty 50-50. Zach's had more bad outings to this point than good. Justin Wilson's too situational to kind of be like that fourth guy in that group. So that leaves what? Weissert?
Leaves Hendricks, too. Like, we haven't talked about Hendricks, that.
Yeah, I'm not doing that yet. You deploy him kind of like you do today, like 6th inning. Situationally, just to build up reps and confidence, but losing. Right now, absolutely not. Or you're up by a lot, absolutely not. You have to lean Weissert. And as far as like AAA guys go, I think if they're gonna promote from within, Birdie's the only guy. Luis Guerrero has not been good. One guy who I did think of, but I just checked his stats. Isaiah Campbell had some like decent flashes last year. He looked decent at times. ERA is atrocious, but his strikeout numbers are good. So I wouldn't call him up. And I think Birdie's kind of that next guy up. And if you're lucky, you kind of pull the Robert Stock. Like, he comes up, if he can't hold his own, you DFA him.
And that's not just us spouting nonsense because he came on our podcast. Like, this guy has been lights the fuck
very
out.
Good.
Lights very the good. Fuck out in AAA. Go find it. Go find his AAA ERA, Sammy. I'm pretty sure he's allowed one earned run down there the entire year. Came up to the Red Sox, pitched 2 innings, didn't allow an earn or a run in either of those innings, immediately got DFA'd and outrighted back to AAA.
Robert Stock, ready? 4 games in AAA, 16.1 innings, 19 strikeouts, and a 0.55 ERA. That is the Playtesi bump right there.
I mean, it's not completely insane to think that he, like, because obviously he's in a bulk role down there. And if he's called up, presumably, like, to me, if Robert Stock made it up here, I feel like he would come up if they wanted to just DFA Newcomb, and then he could eventually find his way into a larger role. I'll tell you another option, because it all kind of connects. Like, we talk about Bayo's impending return. Lucas Giolito, he probably has one more rehab start, kind of implied. Giolito was telling us this weekend he was hoping that today's was going to be his last, but it didn't sound like Cora agreed with that. So I bet he's got one more. And hey, maybe it'll be when we're there on Saturday in Worcester. That would be great.
Yeah.
But when he comes back, now how many? Let's say Fitz comes back too, because he's been playing catch and his whatever thing in the shoulder, whatever his boob injury was, like pretty minor. So what starters do you have healthy? You've got Crochet. We'll say Bayo and Giolito, they're healthy. Bueller, Hauk, Fitz. So now Fitz. Now we're at six.
Newcomb.
And now Dobbins, who...
Dobbins is, yeah.
Had another really good start, and he looks good. My question here when does the point in time come where you're willing to sacrifice a depth starter to get yourself some help in the bullpen? Because let's be real here. If you put any of these guys, I feel like, in the bullpen, particularly a guy like Dobbins or Fitz, and I think Fitz should probably be in this rotation, but let's just, for the sake of discussion here, say if you put him in the bullpen, if guys like Giolito and like how you know, I put out the tweet that said the panic train is off with Hauk, and the second I did that, he throws five scoreless innings. Like, you're welcome for that. If he continues to pitch well and Giolito comes back and looks good and like Fitz just can't get into the rotation, like, when do you sacrifice the depth for starting pitching to get yourself a needed arm in that bullpen? Because you can afford to do it.
You mean like moving someone to the bullpen?
Yeah, and I didn't even talk about Cutter, who threw a couple of up rounds, and now he looks like he's actually on his way back. Like, they have the flexibility to do it. It's just a matter of when do you want to do it, because it's very early in the season.
This is so funny talking about this and then thinking back to last year when we were like, what if Jason Alexander gets a start here or there? Like, who the hell is the depth? Now we're like,
wait,
shit.
Didn't he get called up by the A's? Didn't Jason Alexander pitch
this weekend? He pitched over the weekend.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think he looks like a Mongolian warlord. But anyway, Okay. So, can't move Crochet, obviously. Can't move Bueller. Bayo has to be in the rotation when he's back. Giolito has to be in the rotation when he's back.
So that's one that's interesting. Because Giolito's definitely going to get his shot.
But the At least at first, you got to give him a shot. So I'm penciling him in. And then you have Hauk, who has been really bad, but looked good today on 420 against the White Sox, though. So it's like the two games Hauk has been good in frozen tundra game against the Blue Jays where nobody could hit, and then the White Sox game. So I kind of got to see more out of him.
Way more.
Fitz, when he... Yeah.
Like, Hauk at this point, it's like, show me at least a couple of good outings before I can even feel like reasonably okay with him on the mound. Not to mention like all-star level like he was last year. Like, we got to earn some trust here, but go on.
Cutter, I think when he's back, I think you put him in the bullpen because he was just coming off of a weird knee thing. So I don't know if I want him. Before the knee thing, I was saying you can't put him in the bullpen. He's your innings eater. He's your best innings eater you have. But now with this knowledge of the knee thing, I kind of feel maybe he's better suited for the bullpen. And maybe his stuff ramps up and maybe that's his role. He becomes your right-handed Andrew Miller kind of multi-inning guy. Wishful thinking, but just an idea. Then Fitz was so good before the boob injury.
He's got to be in the rotation if he's healthy.
How could you take him out? And then who have I forgotten? Dobbins, you can keep in AAA for now. I think he'll get more shots eventually.
I feel like you're forgetting someone, and I can't figure out who you're forgetting. You said Giolito. You said
Crochet.
Giolito, Bayo.
Crochet, Bayo, Hauk.
You said Bayo, yeah.
Giolito.
Newcomb, obviously gone. But
yeah, Newcomb to the bullpen.
If Sammy, let's go back to the Cutter Crawford thing, because we've also seen him out of the bullpen before, and it's looked really good when he's done. And granted, it's been a little bit, but we've seen him look like Garrett Whitlock out of the bullpen, or right before he became a starter. That was now 2 years ago. He was filthy out of the bullpen. He's a guy who, like, you insert Cutter Crawford into that bullpen, and It's an entirely different looking equation.
I'm trying to see how many games has Cutter pitched. Okay, he's pitched 86 games and 69 have been starts. So yeah, he's actually had a handful of games out of the bullpen. I'd be fine seeing that. It was a long time ago, but yeah. So okay, that makes sense. Jeez, there's so many arms to go around. Quinn Priester's gone. I think it's a tough equation. Maybe. a fake IL stint for someone?
I was just going to say that. I think whenever the three of Bayo, Giolito, and Dick Fitz are healthy, it's a phantom IL stint for Houck. Let him go figure out mechanics, whatever yes. he's not doing right now.
But what if he's been better?
The different story. I'm just because it's coming up. It's going to be like within the next week and a half, 2 weeks. If he's pitching like he is now, you can't waste an option sending Fitz down to keep him stretched out. Waste an option, burn it, just to inevitably call him up later at some point. You can't do it.
I don't Tanner's, mind wasting the because like Fitz has had one. You get 3 years of options. He's had last year was one. This year they haven't used one, but it's like
yeah.
Richard Fitz is good enough where, like he looks good. Like this is not going to be a guy that's up and down. It's like oh shit, we've wasted our option years. Now we've got a DFA. Like that's a guy who's going to stick in the majors. To yeah. me, I don't want to send him down because I think he's way too good to not be on the big league roster.
Agreed. And I think if Tanner's still middling, if he's not, even today, like today's acceptable. We will not even kind of get into the Tampa game.
No, thanks.
But he's way, way too volatile right now. And when those three guys are healthy, if their time comes and you need all three in, which I think all three should be in at least to start, yeah, it's a ghost IL stint for Tanner.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Let's power rank where we're at with the starting pitchers right now. And I want to include Bayo and Giolito in there. I don't want to include Cutter. So how many does that leave? Okay, I'm going to try to do this right now. I'm going to try to power
I got the list right here. Gordo, you want me to go please. Down the list of starters?
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, obvious number one, Crochet. Then we have Hauk, Buehler, Fitz, Newcomb, Bayo, Giolito, Crawford.
Okay.
Of starters.
Here's
no
here's
Crawford.
Where,
right? Here, we're not yeah. doing Crawford.
Oh, and no Crawford. Okay, sorry. Yeah,
just because it's not coming up. To me, the number two spot is the most interesting area for discussion here. And it's another area where potential, like we talked about in the last episode, Pat talked about Pablo Lopez as a possible trade deadline addition. Twins are bad. Another one could be Joe Ryan. That's another one. He's coming up on free agency in a couple
of
years.
If the Red Sox get Joe Ryan, I will cry tears of joy. That'd be incredible.
Yeah. I mean, they need a number two starter. The most likely to me on the roster right now to emerge into that role, and I think the second best starter to this point is Ben Richard Fitz. But the guy who to me is the most likely to be the number two starter, or sorry, if one pitcher is going to emerge from this team and we are going to say that's our number two starter, to me it's Brian Bayo. And so much of this season, particularly until we get to the trade deadline, hinges on how good Brian Bayo is. Like, don't forget, this is a guy who coming into last season, they extended like he was going to be our ace of the future. And like second half Bayo looked the part. First half Bayo certainly didn't, but the most recent Bayo that we saw looked that part. To me, if we're power ranking where we're at with the pitchers and their likelihood to be in these roles for the start for the rest of the season, it would go Crochet number one and Bayo number two.
What about Buehler? Because Buehler's looked really good in two of his three starts. And I know this stuff isn't there. He's not really striking guys out at a high rate, which kind of gives me pause. But if he can mix and match, I don't know. I just don't. Bayo is so weird, man. Bayo is like,
yeah.
Sometimes he looks like a world beater. Sometimes he looks like he shouldn't even be here. I don't know. I don't know. But if I have to choose, yeah, I think I'd go Bayo as well. Just the upside. Gotta hope he puts it together. The stuff looks good in AAA. The stats don't. So let's pray that the stats don't matter.
Yeah, I've been historically pretty harsh on Bayo. Going back to last year, I think his upside at one point, you guys got very mad at me. I said his ceiling is a three, which I will stand by. But in terms of where I kind of power rank him now in that kind of order there through the end of the year, I would go Crochet one. I haven't seen enough from Buehler to put him in two. Fitz, I'm not super confident that they really want to keep him up as much as we want them to. Giolito hasn't pitched in a year and a half. It's yeesh. Don't really know. Dobbins has looked really good, but he's a young guy. You can kind of wait around for him. It's tough. I think I would go Buehler than Bayo. And I say that just because of track record. Bayo doesn't have the track record. You're kind of banking on upside. Buehler's looked good enough and has a strong enough track record where I can confidently kind of say two.
That's harsh. Wait, on Bayo, what? Though. Ceiling of a three? Ouch.
Pat, did you just say Bayo or Buehler?
Buehler. Sorry, Buehler.
Oh, you're Buehler going Buehler.
I'm going Buehler because of the strong track record. Bayo's track record is not strong.
Okay.
That's the main rationale there. Sorry.
So, okay, that's interesting because to me, and like maybe this is just me being, what's it called? The something, a slave of the moment? What's it called? Something of the
prisoner,
moment?
Prisoner of the moment.
Prisoner of the moment. Maybe I'm being a prisoner of the moment. But to me, my battle for number two right now was between Bayo and Fitz. And to be honest with you, call me insane for this, but just, I'm not going to go this far. There's part of me that feels more confident watching Hunter Dobbins than Tanner Houck. I don't want to loop Giolito in this because we haven't seen it. But to be honest with you, I've been more impressed with Hunter Dobbins than Walker Buehler. Is that crazy?
Well, they have different expectations. Like we expect a lot from Walker Buehler as a all-star starting pitcher. Hunter Dobbins, if he went out there and gave him four innings, two earned runs, I'm sure we'd all be like, that's great. But he's been better than that. I will say he's faced the Cardinals and the White Sox. Yeah. So I do need to see a little more before I put him in that echelon. But he's been good. I don't want to knock the guy. Fitz, I don't think I could comfortably put him in as a good candidate for the number two guy behind Crochet right now. I just haven't seen enough.
No.
I haven't seen enough for him in the injury.
He's my three. He's my three right now. Like if he were healthy.
Yeah, I mean, how could he not? He's been so good.
By the way, I know Dobbins faced the Cardinals. Bueller faced the Cardinals too. It was 5 innings, 5 runs. Bueller's outing so far, 4 1/3, 4 runs, 5 innings, 5 runs, 6 1/3, 1 run, 5 innings, 2 runs. So it's been a couple bad, couple better. It's weird. I like honestly maybe felt better about him watching that the Cardinals start where he allowed 5 runs. I kind of felt like he looked better in that than the Rays start where he allowed 2. I don't know. He's kind of it's so hard to evaluate what you're seeing with him because it's not the stuff guy. He's not that anymore. He's pitch ability now.
Yeah.
So like the mixing stuff's not going to jump off, but that doesn't mean that he can't be effective.
Right.
So like I feel like I'm just going to need to see more because I just haven't watched enough of him.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that Texas start too. I thought it was 2 out of 3 starts. It's 2 out of 4. He's been good. So that's. But he's still Walker Bueller. It's just so hard to not believe in the guy. When you see Walker Bueller on the mound, you're like, that's a guy, but it's just not. It's not the same. I'm going to try to find the velocity numbers between like 2, 3.
Have you guys taken a peek at Tanner Houck's Baseball Savant recently by any chance?
I'm kind of scared too.
Yeah, I actually haven't.
Okay. Do you want it? I have it right here.
Yeah, let's see it.
Pitching run value, first percentile.
Oh.
Fastball run value, 4th percentile. Breaking run value, 9th percentile. Off speed run value, 8th percentile.
Let me interrupt you for a second. These numbers though are all going to be before. Like this isn't updated with.
This is updated today.
How do you know that?
Because up top the stats include all 5 starts.
Shit.
Yeah, it looks updated. Hey, ground ball percentage, 71st percentile. Yeah.
So then Gordo. I won't go number by number, but in terms of where he ranks, all of the following are below 16th percentile. Oh. Expected ERA, expected batting average, average exit velo, K rate, hard hit rate, and extension. He's doing nothing good except getting ground balls that are hit hard.
You know, I trust me. I agree with you. He's easily been... And this includes his start today, which was good. And it included 5 straight scoreless innings after allowing the 2 runs in the first. And it included a 6th inning where he came out there in the 80s for pitches facing, I put it in quotes, the heart of the White Sox order, still a bunch of bums. But he got through that 1-2-3 on less than 10 pitches. I was impressed. That said, even with that, none of that, I mean, it's eye-opening, but it's not entirely surprising just because, I mean, you've watched it. Even his other start, what was his other good start? Was it like 6 innings, 2 runs or something of that order? It was
6 2/3 and 2 earned or something. I forget what it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Even that start, it was 2 strikeouts. And I want to say he had to have had what, like 6 or 7 whiffs. Today he had 12.
Toronto's start, he went 6.2 innings. So that's good. But 2 strikeouts, which,
right.
You know, I mean, he wasn't a massive strikeout guy last year, but he was in the first half. Fuck yeah. So, yeah, dude, this is the thing with Houck. Where there's guys who are struggling, who were previously good, a lot of the times, for me at least, when I dig into the numbers and you look at like, okay, velocity is down, location is this, this, and that, he's using this less, usage is weird, it makes you feel a little bit better. But the more I dig into Houck stuff, the worse it makes me feel. Like the strikeout thing, how do you get around that? He was dominant when he was striking guys out at a high rate, and then he stopped striking guys out and he fell off a cliff, and now he's not striking guys. He's continuing to not do it. Yeah. He's constantly behind in the counts. The radio broadcast, Will and Will, were hammering that point home, and they kept being like, there it is again. Another 2-0 count. Oh, ball one to start. Ball two, another 2-0 count. It kept being like 2-0, and then he'd have to throw a splitter perfectly, and if he doesn't, it gets whacked. But you know, he managed today against the White Sox. But if they're facing the Yankees, I don't want that. That's terrifying to me.
Oh my God. Yeah, that there you go, Sammy, right there. It's like, yeah, you can get by with facing the White Sox. I was about to say maybe the Rays offense, but I got to catch myself because that's the one that pummeled them. It's interesting. Like, let's say in June, not who will be in the rotation, but if you had to say in no order, who do you think the Red Sox five best starters in June are going to be? Is Tanner Houck in the Red Sox top five starters at that point? I don't think he is.
God, that's
and it's hard to say that because I thought he looked good today, but it's just there's a lot that needs to happen for me to regain that trust.
Yeah, right now I'd lean no, unfortunately, which is weird because we were just talking about like last year was the year of Tanner Houck, but yeah, man, I mean it just hasn't been the same without the strikeouts and he's not locating. I hate ball one. Ball one makes me go insane. Ball one, just, and then every stat backs it up. The difference between ball one and strike one, it's night and day. And when you're struggling and you can't get strike one, it's so hard to watch. And we all like Houck. We were rooting for him. We want him to win, but like, fuck, it's hard to watch. Other than Sunday, he was good Sunday. I don't want to totally dump on the guy after a good start.
And I think the biggest thing too, Sam, you mentioned it with ball one. You can now see why Garrett Crochet was so important, because Garrett Crochet threw a lot of ball ones yesterday, like an abnormal amount of ball ones, and he pitched shutout. Like he was still able to get around it. Tanner doesn't have that luxury anymore. Tanner has to be perfect. He has to get a first pitch strike. He has to get chase. He has to get whiff. First pitch ball, and he's throwing his 94 mile an hour sinker. Guys are hunting it. He's going to get pieced up, and he has been getting pieced up. Last year, he had the stuff to kind of maneuver and adapt and be able to get through that. This year, he doesn't. It feels like he's just kind of in a box where he has to be perfect or else he's going to get lit up.
I'm trying to think who would be in my top five, who I think my top five starters will be in June. It's going to be some combination of Crochet, Bayo, yep. Buehler, yep. Fitz, yep. and Giolito, and that would leave out Houck, Cutter, I just don't even know if he's going to get a chance to start.
Newcomb and Dobbins.
It's not going to happen.
You know what's whack? You know what's really weird? Is we've been talking all day today, and we'll move on to something else in a minute. We've been talking about pitching for a while, but we've been talking this whole episode about how many arms they have, how many mouths there are to feed in the way of logging all these innings. They might have to add a starting pitcher if nobody emerges as like a legit number two behind Crochet. Because if you get to the playoffs, Crochet's your game one guy. You have to win that game. You have to win that game or you are fucked because you don't have a good number two starter and you don't want to be relying on your number three guy. So that's a lot of pressure on Crochet, on the Red Sox offense, on everyone. It just goes a long way.
And the bullpen.
Like John Lester, next day, John Lackey. That was great. That felt fine. Pedro Schilling, 1-2. Really good way to
live. Sale Price.
Price is right. Sale. Yeah. Buy now. But yeah, even with all these conversations, we may be rehashing the Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, if you want to get really exciting, those kind of conversations.
Yeah, and I think the Red Sox should be aggressive. I mean, I guess it's all going to connect, but like you talk about who's the shortstop of the future, and you see Marcelo Meyer and Franklin Arias both. And Marcelo has now caught fire in AAA, hit another home run today. Franklin Arias has had a great start. Brian Abraham last week on Baseball Isn't Boring on the radio with us identified him as one of the guys who he's been most impressed with in the farm system this year. And that's another guy who's, if Marcelo's up here and he's playing, like Arias doesn't have a spot. So they're going to have to make decisions. And I think
Romero too, dude. Romero's been playing well too.
Yeah. So they're going to have the flexibility to be aggressive at the trade deadline with guys that are blocked. And I think they should be if there's no obvious number two. And even if there is, like, double up, man. Like, the AL is weak. Like, go over the top. But speaking of shortstops, Trevor Story.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drive deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Let's talk some Trevor Story, because he has had a really good start to the season and was having a good start to the season. It was one of those things where it caught our eye and it's like, okay, this guy's playing well. And then in the first game of the White Sox series, comes out there, hits two bombs, and now it's like, okay, this guy is back. He's arrived. I'm curious about where you guys stand on Story. Like, your trust level with him, do you think it's for real? Because to me, I hesitate with it. And I feel bad because I want to anoint him. I want to say he's back. But at the same time, A, not only have we seen him get injured a lot, not only have we seen that, but even when he was healthy, and this kind of dates back to year one of the contract, because the other 2 years have been really just crushed by injuries. But in year one, he struggled out the gate, and then he got really, really fucking hot for like 2 weeks. And then he kind of came back down to earth. So part of me is scared that it could be another one of those hot streaks before he comes back down to earth. Another part of me is worried that he is going to get hurt again, because like that just happens when it happens. So I'm as incredible as he's been and as excited as I am about the prospect of the Red Sox getting offensive production from Story, which I definitely was not counting on coming into the season, I'm still hesitant to fully buy in. Are you guys on a different page than I am?
Yes.
Go ahead, Pat. I want to hear this.
I am. And one thing that you said that I do kind of want to like allude to, I would classify 2025 Trevor Story as the first healthy Trevor Story that we've gotten. 22, he had that pre-existing elbow thing. His elbow was a ticking time bomb. He was not Trevor Story that he was in 2020, 2021 in Colorado. 23, the surgery, and then everything else, the whole cascade of events. This is truly the first time that Trevor has had a fully healthy offseason. He's coming into the season fully healthy, and he's just doing what he did in Colorado. The talent was never a question. It's always been the health. Am I willing to anoint him back? Yeah.
Ooh.
I am.
There we go.
The batted ball metrics are really good. His defense is really good. When he's healthy, he's been really good. He's just never healthy. So in terms of like him falling off a cliff, I don't see it happening. I truly don't. Do I think he's going to end the year hitting 318 like he is right now? No, absolutely not. But reverting back to Colorado Story, hitting, you know, 270, maybe 280, 2025 bombs, 2025 steals. Yeah, I do. I truly believe that he is back. This is the first time we've seen him healthy. When he is healthy, historically, he is a very, very, very good baseball player. Hence why he got $140 million from the Boston Red Sox. Like, he is worth that if healthy, and he finally is.
Sammy, before you give your take, I'll just read off where he's at stat-wise, and I'll go off the Savant page first. Barrel percentage, 82nd percentile. Hard hit, 87th percentile. Launch angle, sweet spot percentage, 64th percentile. So all that great. Still chasing, 3rd percentile in chase, 26th percentile in whiff, 21st percentile in K percentage, 9th percentile in walk percentage. The counting stats, .318 batting average, .866 OPS. He's got 5 bombs. He's already accumulated 1.1 WAR in just 22 games. Like, that's all good. I mean, yes, he's chasing. That's who Trevor Story is. He can be an effective player while chasing. But the chase is also part of what has me so hesitant, because we've just seen so much of that. But yeah, that's where he's at numbers-wise. Sammy, on a scale of Gordo to Pat, because I feel like we're on very opposite ends of the spectrum, where do you fall?
It's tough to say where I fall on the spectrum, but I have a very, very simple take with Trevor Story. And this is where I've been since the day he got acquired by the Red Sox. If he's healthy, he will produce. And I agree with Pat. This is the first time he's been 100% healthy other than like 5 minutes in 2024 to start the season. I think this is way more who he is than what we've seen previously in years past. This is the guy the Red Sox thought they were getting. No, I don't think he's going to be hitting in the 300s at the end of the year. That's a bit much. I think the defense will probably get a little better as he gets more comfortable. But yeah, man, this is Trevor Story. This is the guy the Red Sox have wanted to see. You know, wish it came a year or two earlier. But hey, it's 2025. We can't complain about the past. So I'd keep running him out there every game as long as he's healthy. And when Marcelo is ready to come up, I think he'll probably be playing second base, at least for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have zero clarity on where this whole, when Roman and Marcelo come up, who are the odd men out, because there's going to be multiple. And that's not even to talk about Masataka Yoshida. We're just assuming he's not long for this team. The question I want to ask, because we talked about this in the offseason, and I talked about the potential that Story could have a good enough season to opt out. And you guys looked at me like I was crazy. I didn't think he needed to have a very good offensive season at all to opt out, because I thought his defense could carry him to that and elevate his WAR to a spot where he could opt out. Now it's weird. It's like his defense has been solid. It's been okay. Hopefully it improves. The bat is what is getting him to this level. Are you guys now monitoring the possibility that he could play well enough to opt out at the end of the year?
No way.
I think there's no shot in hell.
Pat, I'm curious with that coming from you, Pat, because it's a weak offensive class for free agents. This guy's already at 1.1 WAR, B-WAR. If this guy gets into 4-WAR territory, which that's not crazy at all to think at this point, if he gets into 4-5 WAR territory, like, he's opting out. He will do it.
Maybe. I don't know what his contract would look like. Me and Sam were actually talking about this at Fenway yesterday before you got there. He has, what, 2 years and $55 million left on his deal?
I thought it was 250. Let me check, but keep going. I'll verify.
I think it's I'm pretty sure it's 2 for $55 million. If he opts out, he's a 32-year-old shortstop who has had one healthy year in 4 years.
It's 2 for $50 million with a $5 million buyout. So yeah, you're right.
Okay.
It's gonna be Pat, I think he's actually gonna be, it's gonna be his age 33 season next year.
Yeah. No, exactly.
It's 2 for $50 million. It's 2 for $50 million. Because the buyout would be if he opts out. So it's 2 for $50 million.
Okay.
Okay. Or, yeah, whatever. Go on.
So he's a 33-year-old shortstop who's had one healthy season in 4 years. I just don't see him getting like a 4 for $80 million that would kind of justify him opting out. I don't see that happening. I don't think anybody in their right mind is signing him through age 36 for $20 million a year. I just don't think he's an opt-out candidate. I don't think he would want to do it. And I also just don't think it would be smart financially for him to do it.
So I'll bring up an example here. Ha Sung Kim, who still has yet to play for the Rays, and they knew that when they signed him. They signed him to a 2-year, $29 million deal, knowing that he was not going to play for multiple months in the first year of that deal. Trevor Story, if he has a good, if he tops 4.5 WAR, will easily beat the 2-year 29. He needs to beat 2 for $50 million, so it's obviously a long way to go. But I don't think it's crazy at all.
But Ha Sung Kim is 3 years younger, and he's had 2 5 WAR seasons in the last 3 years.
Also, he's played prior to last year. He's played 150 and 152. He played 121 games last year before he got hurt. His last 3 years before he was a free agent were very, very healthy. Story's not that. Story's not going into it with its great track record of being on the field and available.
I have a question.
And also being 33.
Ha Sung Kim and Trevor Story is not even a good comparison. Those two are completely different players.
I don't think they're that different. They're both shortstops. They've both, for the last several years, been defense first shortstops.
So you're telling me that if you had a shortstop to save your life and win a World Series, you'd pick Ha Sung Kim over Trevor Story?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just comparing their situations. Free agents, injury related histories, defense first guys, both pull the ball to the left side. I don't think it's a crazy comp at all.
But Ha Sung Kim plays shortstop, third base, second base. Like, he plays all over. He's played like a bunch. He's played 307 games at short.
He can
127 at second. He moves back. He bounces back and forth all the time.
Sammy, but the way, but it's not a back and forth thing. They had him at second because they signed Xander to play shortstop, and then they were like, this is fucking stupid. Kim is way better defensively than Xander. We're gonna put Xander at second.
And he played second before Xander too. Like he's bounced around a lot. He's more versatile than Story, is what I'm saying.
Yes, he absolutely is. Absolutely. But he's signed to play short. Like that's what he's signed to play shortstop and then give way and be versatile when what's his name? The prospect, their big shortstop prospect Rays guy.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Whatever.
Carson Williams.
Yeah. But Gordo, this to this point, Story doesn't really have that ability. He could move to second.
Story was Ha-Sung a great second baseman.
But Ha-Sung can go all around the field. I think he's even played. No, he hasn't played outfield. Probably could. But he can play third as well. He's just more versatile, and he's done it more than Story. Where Story's like, I am shortstop. I doubt he would love to move to second. That's the only way I could see him opting out is if he doesn't like the situation in Boston with if they're like Myers the shortstop, and he's like, shit, I want to play short. That's the only way. I don't think it would be like a numbers thing, though.
Okay, follow up to this. Because let's say he has a good season and then doesn't opt out. We're definitely into the territory where he's having, and granted, like we've got way too much time left to be having this conversation, but if he has a good enough season where it's like, we could trade that contract. It's not like a Yoshida unmovable contract.
Like Sean Murphy, that's the kind of trade it would be. Like the Braves need a shortstop, the Red Sox need a catcher, and then Sean Murphy, I don't know the exact numbers, but also on a big contract, also a little bit older, also dealt with injuries, but good when he's healthy. You swap those two guys, they're both in better situations, yeah. Bang, something like that. I just, the opt-out thing, I give it like a 5% chance, very outside chance, like below 10%. Like it could happen, but incredibly unlikely.
Well, I also have it pretty low. Like I definitely have it below 20%, but my reasoning is that I just don't think that he's going to continue to do what he's doing. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he does continue to do what he's doing. If he does continue to do what he's doing, or even some variation of it, he will opt out. That is where I'm at. Put it on the board. This is the board bet. If Trevor Story tops 4.5 WAR this year, he will opt out. You guys, if he is 4.5 WAR or above, you are both of the opinion that he will not opt out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I don't think he will.
It's
the season's past. Like who would confidently give him a multi-year deal? And don't say someone will do it cuz it's not a guarantee. We've seen guys overestimate their market before. I don't think a 33-year-old shortstop who's had one healthy season in the last 77 million years is guaranteed to get a contract, especially when he's got the elbow issue and then he had a labrum issue and there's so many factors at play. I can't confidently see a team being like, yeah, we'll give you two for more than 50 million and in a better situation than friggin' Boston.
Also, like, I think point blank, he's a 33-year-old shortstop. He would have to like set the record for biggest contract for a 33-year-old shortstop to make that financially make sense to opt out.
And it would have to be a wealthy team that is currently contending that does not have a good shortstop. That is a very niche team. I don't know. I can't think. Braves, the only one I could think of.
I'm wondering if it could get ugly potentially. Like, could the Red Sox try to pull like what the Diamondbacks did with Jordan Montgomery and be like, yeah, we're going to move Trevor to second base if he opts in and like maybe he won't play. Like even if he has a great season, like, I don't know. We'll see. It's kind of weird to be having that conversation right now because again, we have to see him do this. But when he plays well, the opt out always comes into my mind because I really do think the best case scenario for everyone involved is Trevor Story crushes it, gets a deal, a bigger deal than 2 for $50 somewhere else where he can stick at shortstop and play. The Red Sox can move on and have Marcelo Meyer be their shortstop of the future. But yeah, we're a ways away from that and we're running on time. So let's do a really quick enough said. Does anyone have anything? Enough said. Want to go first on the enough said?
Yep. Just want to say congrats to the Boston Celtics on moving on to the second round of the playoffs. I consider the series over.
Stop
up
the
one
jinxing.
Game. Stop one game jinxing. To nothing over the Orlando Magic. Magic made a one run in the second quarter, and then they just laid down and died. I expect that to continue. Celtics didn't even play their best. Tatum wasn't shooting well, had like one wrist. So, and Brown hasn't played for a while. He's recovering. So, yep, this is over. I am on to New York or Detroit, whoever comes out of that round. I believe that's who the Celtics get to beat next. And yeah, it's been a fun start to the playoffs. First team to sweep in one game. Actually, and then the Thunder became the second team to sweep in one game when they beat Memphis by 1,000 points.
I forgot about what Celtics playoff.
Technically, Sammy, the Thunder played first.
I forgot what playoff basketball was like since knowing you, Sammy, because I'm always so cautious and I think we're going to jinx everything. And you're just like,
I don't care about it. I do this with every sport, dude. I do this with every sport. And if it comes back to bite me, it's fun content. Who cares? Like, I'm not, I don't actually think I have any. We have no effect on these athletes' ability to play.
We do. Trust me, when I said that Hauk, the panic train started, I guaranteed Hauk was going to throw 5 scoreless innings after that.
Does that make you a very, I don't know, isn't that kind of narcissistic? Be like, I affect these guys. I'm powerful.
Well, it's not just me. It's everyone. It's like the combination of what everyone is saying. If like 30% of the fans are cocky and 70% of the fans are pessimistic, then the pessimistic ones outweigh the cocky, and the cockies
don't
have
any impact. The only time it's up to the players is if the fan base is just split down the middle.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I love it. Gordo science.
All right, Pat, you got anything?
Yeah. I can't remember a larger and faster fall from grace than Emmanuel Classe this year.
Oh, yeah.
What? He today, so for those who are unaware, he has more earned runs and more blown saves so far this year than he did in all of 2024. Today, he didn't even get the save opportunity. 6, 7, 8. He did. I lied. He did. He went 1 inning, 4 hits, 3 earned, and a walk. No strikeouts. His season ERA is up to 7.84.
Oof.
He was 2024 Emmanuel Classe probably was a top 5 closer I've seen in my life. Like peak for peak season, he was that good. He now sucks. And Cleveland is not great. And
Paul Sewell thinks too.
It blows my mind. Like he's not old, he's not young. I don't think he's banged up. He just sucks now. It's
insane. It started in the postseason too. Like it kind of just carried over from the Yankees.
It's truly like same thing with like Devin Williams.
Yeah,
same thing with Devin Williams. They're both just still paying the price, like mentally. It's insane. It's why you
never, ever give long-term deals to closers, though. Yep. One example is if the Red Sox magically got Mason Miller. He's very young. I'd be like, okay, this is the exception to the rule. But like Class A last year, if you were like, would you extend him 5 years? Fuck no. Fuck no. Even though he had like a 0.65 ERA, fuck no.
It scares the shit out of me. Like hearing that, and like we saw it with Alek Manoah, like these guys who are top of the tops in the game, and they just poof, and it's gone. And like obviously, like we'll wait and see if Classic can turn it around. Manoah never did, but yeah, that scares the shit out of me. Like any of these guys, it doesn't matter. Like no, I'm not even gonna put it in the earth. I'm just gonna go on to my Nuff Said. Shout out to my brother-in-law, also named Sammy, running the marathon for the second year in a row. So big shout out to him. Good luck to him. And yeah, 26.2 miles is a lot of running, and I've never run that much in my life, and I can't believe people do that in one sitting. So shout out to all those people running. And if you listen to this whole podcast while running the marathon, tweet it out to us. Let us know, because that would be super cool. But yeah. That's going to do it for episode 201 of Playtesty. Appreciate you guys tuning into this one. Remember, like, rate, subscribe. Wherever you get your podcast, 5 stars, you know the drill. On YouTube, on the WEI page, on the Playtesty playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos. Subscribe to WEI and find us on the socials. Follow us everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Tons of good content. We've still got interviews coming out. We're going to have an interview for you on the next episode on Wednesday, and we'll have clips from this pod and clips from that interview coming out on the socials, so keep an eye out for those. But for Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo here for Playtesty episode 201. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.